Welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about China's interesting social credit experiments and issues with your local crypto exchange. Things to be aware and afraid of. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get started. With me this week is Monica.
Hey, John.
Hey, and Steve.
Hello there. Good to be here in person again.
Again, yeah. Good. Glad you're here.
From the FinTech Newscast headquarters in San Francisco.
On the 38th floor of the FinTech Newscast building. Yeah, that's right.
Let's go to China.
Let's go to China.
Let's take a little break from the malfeasance of crypto exchanges and start thinking about the authoritarian tendencies of Chinese leadership.
Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, so the AP, the Associated Press, put out an article in the last couple of weeks around some of the impact that the push that China has been making in social credit is having on people who maybe don't have the highest social credit score. And we've referred to this before. This is where it's probably like a public-private partnership where companies in China will share information with the government, things like what you put on your social media profile, if you paid your telephone bill late, where you are in all of your finances. All of this is kind of collated, and you're assigned a score. And it has real implications for people whose scores aren't great. So some of the things that this article noted is that there were would-be air travelers were blocked from buying air tickets over 17 million times last year because their social credit maybe showed that they had unpaid taxes or fines. There were also another 5.5 million train tickets that were not sold to people. And of course, I cannot tell you right now if some of those air tickets were people who then tried to buy a railroad ticket. So don't add all these numbers up to get to the affected number of people. But that's a lot of blocked transactions. That particular info comes from the National Public Credit Information Center. And of course, this is, I'm assuming, a Chinese entity. And 128 people were blocked from leaving China due to not having paid their taxes. So not only is your travel conscripted within the country, but you may not be able to leave it.
But all my millions are outside of the country now, so.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to Vancouver to get my real estate.
Or
exactly.
Thailand.
Right. Or Thailand, yeah.
So to kind of further make this interesting, this system is not implemented across all of China yet, but the Chinese state would like for that to happen by 2020. And also, to make it even more interesting, it's not really clear which parts of the country and which parts are not. So I'm sure some of them you might assume like, oh, Beijing, Shanghai, but you know, China has many, many, many other cities with millions of people in them that we just don't talk about. So who knows where it's really in effect right now. I need to share with you the phrase that state media repeats frequently within China.
They're big on slogans, right?
They're big on slogans.
Communists are always big on slogans.
Yeah. I mean, really, I kind of think governments are, but
okay,
I'm particularly, this one isn't as florid or as long as so many amazing Chinese government pronouncements, but here goes. Once you lose trust, you will face restrictions everywhere. I mean, Jesus, does that make you feel comfortable?
Orwellian, yeah, absolutely.
So it's really kind of pushing the fear of having a bad social credit score. Now, at the same time, you know, they're putting this, once you lose trust, you will face restrictions everywhere language out. They also want to kind of use, I don't know if it's the carrot or the stick, but since they've been putting in what they call, in the euphemism, joint punishment, which I think is, you know, if you don't pay your taxes, you'll get punished by the government and you'll get punished by private entities, the system has caused 3.5 million people to, quote, voluntarily fulfill their legal obligations, end quote.
Voluntarily, in quotes.
Yeah. While they're blinking in Morse code, get me out of here.
Right.
So it makes it sound like some people are actually paying their overdue tax bills, including 37 people who paid a total of 150 million yuan, which is about $22 million, in overdue fines or confiscations.
That seems like it's small potatoes. So a couple of things on this.
But it's not nothing.
It's not nothing. It's not nothing. So I heard an interview with a woman who actually ran for Congress last year named Brianna Wu from, I think, Western Mass. And as the name implies, she's not actually a Chinese, but her husband is, Wu. And she mentioned that she has really been interested in sort of the credit social scoring system and how that works. But she mentioned that after taking a trip to China and also speaking with a lot of people who are in the system now and some of her family members from China, she's becoming a lot less critical of the system. So her argument is that, you know, in East Asian societies, which tend to be a lot more collectivist than we are here in the West, and that, you know, we shouldn't really judge this as a way for the state to get control, but as a way for them to assess, you know, what is a good outcome that we want to influence our people to actually do, be it, you know, pay your fines on time, don't jaywalk, be nice to your elders, all the things that could affect your credit score. Her argument is that although it is, from our perspective, you know, a big state, massive thing that wouldn't fly here, we should still keep it in the context of the Chinese cultural space and how that collectivist nature can really have an effect on this, and also people are less critical in the, there than they are of it here, because they see one thing: the government has delivered on its economic promises, and they see this as another way to kind of weed out bad actors and do something for the greater good. Not what I believe in per se, but an interesting argument about the credit social scoring system in China.
It's an interesting perspective, and she's lucky that she lives in a country that allows her to express it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. As she flew away from this system.
As she went, from that to Western Mass.
And choose to live there.
Yeah.
But, you know, this isn't just Chinese people, too. There's actually a scoring for foreigners to get a work visa there. So you have three levels. You're either a Class A, Class B, or Class C foreigner. So, of course, the first thing I did when I heard this, this went into effect a little over 2 years ago, is see how many points did I score.
Yeah.
What kind of class?
What's your grade?
So 85 and above is Class A. That's like top athlete or, you know, world-renowned scientist.
Uh-huh.
And then 60 to 85 is Class B.
Uh-huh.
And then below that, you're Class C, unskilled labor or not desirable, more or less.
I think I'm a Class
so
D.
They say that so Class C should be highly restricted. Is their language for that? So I scored 75.
Bragger.
Ooh. Well, because I lost points. So I'm not 85. I'm not the Class A.
Right.
But I lost points because I don't speak any Chinese. Mm. So that's one of the criteria.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you get very little points. It's like 1 to 4 or 5. You know, if you're like fluent, you only get like 5 points. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is how many years that you've worked in China already. Mm-hmm. So you get some points for that.
Mm-hmm.
So
pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I want to be clear. I actually think that different countries, you know, as a sovereign state, you really do get to decide what you do to a large degree. And if this works for China broadly, fair play, good for them. It many, many aspects make me deeply uncomfortable because I have been raised in a very American freedom, Bill of Rights.
You can say things like, fuck the president.
The Constitution is the most beautifully written piece of text ever. You know, we've all been steeped in that. And so these kinds of things make me deeply uncomfortable.
Hey, England, at least we wrote down a Constitution.
I also think that It looks very similar to me around arguments against privacy. Like, well, if you don't have anything to hide, why should you need privacy? And I'm not comfortable with that because even people who are not
Chinese
ashamed
people say that,
of what they do behind closed doors or what they do online when their ISP isn't looking, which your ISP is always looking. That doesn't mean that you want everyone to know it, to score it, to evaluate it. So I think it's, I think it's creepy, but I also think it's interesting. And a lot of things that are creepy are not without positive value.
Mm-hmm.
So tax collectors getting paid their taxes, that has huge societal value. Assholes getting treated like assholes, that has huge societal value. And I would like for us to come up with
that. I'm completely against that.
I'd like for us to come up with some creative ways to do that here in the States. But I'm not sure I'm not sure that I want the government and like the biggest private companies we have getting together to score us to do it.
I agree. And I think that it's definitely something that has to be looked at through the lens of culture and place and all that kind of stuff. To kind of switch gears a bit, one other thing that I've heard is that, and this makes sense from a U.S. perspective, was to bring it back to the U.S. Somebody mentioned the idea that if you have a high score in China, you're likely part of the Communist Party. So if you follow through that logic, that means that if you are applying to come to the U.S. as a student or to work in a technical field, and you have a high score, mm-hmm. maybe you should be denied. So that there should be an upper threshold above which you are denied entry into the U.S. because you are likely to engage in espionage mm. if you have, say, like a 99 or something. That means that you're basically a party loyalist mm. and a puppet of the state.
Who used it again? Are you trying to judo their social credit system?
That's the argument. Yeah, the argument is that our U.S. intelligence services should just use it as a way to say, you want to come here and get a degree in STEM, but you have a 98 or so, not going to happen. Sorry, you
can't
come
into
the country.
Masses.
We want the unwashed masses, yeah. Not the washed masses seeking highly technical stuff, yeah.
That really bums me out because I personally feel like if the U.S. wants to move to a more Australian or Canadian style of immigration entry where we score people and we highly overvalue particular skills or expertises, you can really get me on board with that, and I'm already looking at a geopolitical world where the U.S. is throwing away its quite long-held status as the best place in the world to study whatever is the most important thing that the world needs to study, and that just looks like a way to lose a lot of talent.
Agreed. Yeah.
So I hope that doesn't actually come to pass.
It's quite devious, but yeah, it's basically political intelligence judo. For this.
It seems like China's doing its best to drive away those intellectuals, so we should be open to taking some of them.
Not scientists though, not the AI researchers and the STEM people, just the Ai Weiwei's of the world.
Yeah, they don't want outspoken activists and they don't want artists, but
no.
They want their engineers.
They want AI researchers and CS people, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they want their CRISPR baby gene editors.
Yeah.
Although, wasn't that guy sentenced to death?
No, he's in jail, but I don't think he's...
Even the Communist Party doesn't work that fast.
All right, on that happy note, let's get on to our final bite.
Ooh, can I please go first?
Please.
No.
Aww.
All right, baby.
My number is...
It's
going to
be good now, then.
It's really good. So a bit of context. Through a friend of mine, I met this guy who was a postdoc at Stanford doing bioengineering something or other. I don't know. His name's Jake. We text
Let's
a lot.
Say.
Let's say. Sure. His name is Jake. We text a lot. So I met him like 3 years ago. And I've been following the Theranos story closely for about 2 or 3 years. It's fascinating.
Yes.
I just can't get enough of it. I just finished reading Bad Blood.
Such a good book.
And today is Tuesday the 19th, and I'm going to go home tonight and watch the HBO documentary on Theranos. I'm really into it. Love John Kerry or whatever. My number is... Oh, sorry. And to go back to Jake. So Jake mentioned this maybe like 2 years ago or so. He mentioned that even back in 2017, 2016, people who worked in the bioengineering department of Stanford knew this was all a sham. The tech didn't work. She was a hoax. It was all just going to go up in flames. It was a matter of when, not if. So even with that information and reading all the articles in Vanity Fair and The New Yorker and the profiles and stuff, I'm so fascinated by it. And the number that I want to share is $125 million, which is the amount that Rupert Murdoch invested in Theranos. And he, of course, lost completely after the company was wiped out. So
why do you have a big smile on your face?
It's Rupert Murdoch. He's a very hateable guy. He's this.
Pocket change for him.
It is. Yeah, he's worth a few billion dollars, so it is pocket change. But it still warms my heart to know that he lost money. In addition to the Waltons from the Walmart family,
yes,
and Betsy DeVos also.
Oh, right.
Her family also
yeah.
lost money. Yeah, so just a little icing on the cake there. And yeah, if you haven't. Do read Bad Blood. It's a fascinating story. And watch the doc tonight.
I wholeheartedly recommend Steve's recommendation. And that book it is amazing because she hoodwinked so many people that we would put in the great and the good category.
I don't know. Who would you consider great or good?
Former Secretary of Defense General Jim Mattis.
Mad Dog Mattis?
Yeah.
I think it was a bit out of his depth. He's a DOD guy. He's a general. He's not biotech.
Yeah. Well, in that sense.
Kissinger.
They were biotech people, right?
Yeah, Bill Frist.
That should have been a huge red flag, right?
They were heavyweights, conservative heavyweights, by the way, all of them.
Yeah, well, I just think that she had an amazing ability to get
powerful old
white guys to be fully on board with her vision, to they would disbelieve other people who they had pre-existing trusting relationships with. She destroyed relationships between grandparents and grandsons.
George Shultz and his grandson.
Poor Tyler. So I read that book over Thanksgiving last year, and my husband and I were traveling, and I would just be like, every time we'd sit down to eat a meal, I'm like, you won't even believe what Tyler is having to put up with now. You need to read the book, so you're going to feel bad for Tyler, too. Tyler is a good egg.
But, Granddad, I work there. I saw. You just don't get it.
Oh!
All right.
And what, nobody ever talks about her number two. Where's that guy? Is he in jail?
Sonny Balbani? Balbani or something? I have no idea.
Where's that P.O.S.?
He's also been charged.
I think he's been indicted. There are rumors that that he fled the country back to Pakistan, India.
Oh no, we need to pull a Bin Laden. We got to go get him back.
get SEAL Team 6 on this. Yeah. Gotta get that guy back.
If you've seen Sonny, please check in with us. Send us an email.
info@fintechnewscast.com.
Yeah. All right, Monica, top that.
Oh, gosh. Well, I surely can't top it for drama. But my final bite is $35 billion. And that is what Fidelity National Information Services, often called FNIS because that's sexier, they are buying WorldPay. These are two behemoths in the world of payment settlement. And this just really kind of goes to show that there's a huge arms race in this space. The old line companies really recognize that they need the scale, and they also need to invest big time in their technology to make it against a lot of the fintech startups. This will be an interesting battle to watch with a few Goliaths and many more Davids.
Consolidation, billions of dollars, bound to happen. So I'm going to be the feel-good number out of today's final bites. $100 million going from Goldman Sachs, well, a loan, to a fintech in Mexico called Credijusto. Yes, a four-year-old fintech in Mexico City that gives loans to small and medium-sized businesses, which is a starving market. There's a lot of small companies that are small because there's not a good lending platform. There's not good distribution of credit within the country, even though there's some these solid companies that have been around, some family-owned for decades, and that are great investments. But they're not growing because they're undercapitalized, and no one has built this kind of market there yet. Actually, John, this company, Credijusto, has a lot of great backers. A lot of them were former bigwigs in finance. The former CEO of Morgan Stanley, John Mack, is one of the investors in this company.
Oh, flashback. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he has a great quote. He says, if the whole family is dedicated to the business and there's an opportunity to grow, that's a bet I'll take. So, I like to see that. And Credijusto is not the only one jumping into this market where there's a lot of demand and it's been underserved. Another one is called Konfio, and Quesky is another one. And it seems like people are realizing the potential of this market.
I wanted to ask my fellow Spanish speakers, what do we think the translation of Credijusto is?
Oh, it's just fair credit.
Fair credit.
Okay, I wondered if it's like...
Just?
Yeah, just, fair. Righteous. Yeah.
It's justo as injustice.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah, and people like investing in this space also because they see it as less crowded in Mexico, mm-hmm. So less competition, at least for the time being. So Credijusto has grown from $10 million in loans and equipment financing in 2017 to $35 million last year, and they're looking at growing up to $125 million in loans for 2019, and hopefully growing out the market and helping these businesses.
I mean, when you think about the fact that, you know, the United States has the Small Business Administration to kind of facilitate loans to this market segment here in the U.S., how cool is it that you can actually find and create a marketplace for that, to do that in another country?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right. That's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please email us at info@fintechnewscast.com for any comments, or if there's a topic you'd like to hear about. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news, and thanks for listening.
We'll talk to you next week.
Indeed, we will. Thanks.